Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest at the big table tonight is an award-winning mystery author. He's a two-time Edgar Award winner and a New York Times bestseller for his Alex McKnight series. He's out with a new character, which means a new series? We'll find out. The book is called The Second Life of Nick Mason, and it's written by Steve Hamilton. Hamilton's one of the country's great crime fiction writers, and this book takes a look at a Chicago ex-con who's given early release from federal prison, but for a price. It's a great character, and Chicago plays a huge role in this book. Steve Hamilton, welcome to The Download.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You're not from Chicago, but you got it.
I hope so. The Tribune said I did, so that was like, I was kind of worried, but...
Why set it here?
Well, because, I'm going to flatter you, but this is the greatest city in the world. And if it's not the greatest, it's certainly one of the greatest. And I grew up in a different city, not far away, Detroit, Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I always sort of thought of Chicago as like our sister city. But when I came here, I realized that there's a whole different thing going on here because there are so many worlds inside one city here in a way that I would never really seen anywhere else.
Let's talk about Nick Mason because it's not just sort of like a crime novel that's set in Chicago. I mean, Nick Mason's from Chicago.
Right.
There's a lot that goes in between Canaryville, Back of the Yards.
There's a lot.
There's a very, very specific. How do you research that? I mean, do you know the city well enough to go from neighborhood to neighborhood, or is it more of just getting on the computer and figuring out?
Well, no. I think I have to be here, and I think I know it a lot better now because I spent so much time here writing this book. I was, this book took a year, and I spent a lot of time here just being in Chicago, learning all about this place. Really what it feels like. It always comes down to that. What does it feel like to be in this amazing city and in the different worlds that are inside the city? And then I also spent a lot of time with a homicide detective talking about what it's like to be a cop in this city, which is not necessarily the funnest thing in the world these days. But I got to see it from his perspective, and I got to talk to a journalist who's lived here his whole life and loves this city and has covered it. So he had a whole different take on this city, too. So I just, you just come and you just be here and talk to people.
Well, I kind of mentioned, in the lead about the idea of Nick Mason being an ex-con who's given early release for a price.
For a price, yeah.
And that's really what the setup of this book is about Nick getting out of prison where he was supposed to be there for a long time and getting an opportunity to have freedom, but he's not really free.
No. If you put yourself in his shoes, you're in federal prison. You're doing hard time. You're doing 25 to life. You know it's going to be a long time before you ever get out, if you ever do. And you're given this offer that will get you out and will let you see your family again. So you take it because you have to. And so he takes this deal, but it's really a devil's bargain that he takes because once he gets out, and by the way, he doesn't just get out.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a whole new life.
Right.
I mean, this is a Canaryville kid who is in prison, and he gets out, and all of a sudden, he's in a Lincoln Park.
He's in Lincoln Park West.
Townhouse. Right. He's driving a 68 Mustang, restored, vintage. He has money in a safe deposit box every month. He's got this beautiful roommate. I mean, he's got everything seemingly that a man could want. But the price of all this is that this deal that he made, when that phone rings, he has to pick it up. And he has to do exactly what he's told to do, no matter what it is, no matter what kind of crime, no matter what kind of horrible thing that he never thought he would do in his life. That's the deal that he made, and there is no way out of it.
That's a great conflict, especially for a mystery novel, because there really is no way out. I mean, for him to get to any sort of semblance of freedom, he's not only going to have to get out of this deal, but he's still essentially, serving it. Even if he's not serving it in prison, he's serving it for somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. He's gone from one prison to another. And that's really what this whole first book is about, is how he adjusts to that. And he really just starts to think about, how am I going to get out of this? But by the end of the book, he's certainly not out.
We're talking with Steve Hamilton here on The Download. Let's talk about Nick Mason. Where's he come from?
He is a Canaryville kid. That's where he grew up. It just sort of felt like the right place for him. He is a career criminal. I mean, there's no apologizing for that fact of his life. He grew up stealing cars, doing robberies. He tried to go straight when he got married, and he made a terrible mistake one night and did something that he never should have done. It broke all of his rules.
Right.
I mean, he has this code. He has these rules that he's lived by his whole life to keep that part of his life separate. And he broke them all one night, and he paid for it, and he went to prison. And that's how this book starts.
Is it tough for you as a novelist and you know, writing crime fiction, is it tough to have the hero be someone who is a career criminal, who inevitably is bad?
Well, that's the challenge of this book and of this series. And yes, by the way, this is only book one of a series. I'm in book two now. And I'm
okay, great.
I can actually see like seven of them already that I've got sort of laid out. Because, I mean, once you get this guy in this spot where he's got to answer the phone and do whatever he's told, this can take him anywhere. But yeah, I mean, this guy, he is who he is. But it's funny how people are reacting to him because, I mean, I've written about an ex-cop who moves to a very lonely place. That was the first series with Alex McKnight. And that, you know, at least that's an ex-cop. And that's somebody who was on the right side of, you know, in quotes, on the right side of things and is just trying to put his life together. Nick is a whole different type of character. But he gets out, he takes this deal for reasons that you can relate to, at least. That's as a start. He gets out because he wants to see his ex-wife again. And more than anything, he wants to see his daughter.
Right.
And she's 9 years old. He's been gone for 5 years, more than half her life. He wants to see her again. That's something that we can all relate to. And we can all connect with him on that level, at least as a start. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
Is that for you as a writer, is it important for you when you're working on a character, especially a character that's featured in a series, to have these redeeming qualities where it might be family, it might be, like you said, his rules, his code of rules, like to make him relatable to people who may not want to side with the criminal?
Well, I think that's true with any character because there's no such thing as an evil, totally evil person. Really, or if there is, it's not very interesting. You know, I think Nick is more interesting because he is a human being first, and he does have more in common with you and me than he has different.
We're talking with Steve Hamilton. The book is called The Second Life of Nick Mason. Nick Mason is his new character, of course. Steve is a best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author. Also, he's won two Edgar Awards. We'll continue the conversation. Let's take a quick break. I want to get inside your head about how you set up characters. It's so interesting to me, the idea of creating characters and series. And we'll talk more with Steve when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest here at the big table tonight, Steve Hamilton, longtime mystery and crime fiction writer. New York Times bestseller for his Alex McKnight series. He's got a new book, The Second Life of Nick Mason, which is out now. Nick Mason, as we mentioned, is a Chicago character. This whole book is set in Chicago, even to the point where he's traveling out to Elmhurst to, you know, he's going to some of the suburbs. And you mentioned, I mean, you sat down with people from Chicago. How important was it for you to have this character actually be set in Chicago? I mean, could Nick just be a kid from New York and have him in New York? Why bring it here? Why do it in this area? I know you said it's the greatest city.
Yeah, it is. No, there's something, it just felt, it's funny when you first think of a character, you think of where he belongs. And Alex was a Detroit cop, and that's from the beginning. And Nick is a certain kind of guy, and especially because of the fact that he has to leave his home and go away to prison and come back home. And yet it's not home, you know, and Chicago is the great place for that. I mean, if he was a Southsider who went away to prison and he comes back to Lincoln Park, he's back in Chicago. But he
is a different kind of Chicago.
He is a whole different world. And there aren't that many cities where you have something that it's that pronounced and that just this overwhelming sense of you've left one world and you've entered another one.
Were you able to, as a writer, spending a chunk of time here, a year, understand not only the neighborhoods, but the politics? I mean, obviously, being with a homicide detective and also with a journalist, you're going to understand more about what's happening here with the Chicago Police Department and the issues of the day?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of some of it's kind of heartbreaking, obviously, some of the stuff that's happened lately. But it sort of goes back in an unbroken line for a long time. And as you look back in the history of this city, the worst people in this book, ironically, are a crew of sort of corrupt, dirty cops. And you look back in Chicago's history, back not that far, and you find SOS, this special operations section that was just running rampant for years and doing things that you couldn't make up. I mean, if you know, it's just they were robbing drug dealers and kidnapping and torturing, and then one of the ringleaders tried to have another officer killed who was going to cooperate with the investigation. And this was all 10 years ago.
Right. So, this is not 50 years ago.
No, this is 10 years ago.
A decade ago.
This isn't Al Capone days. Right. This is 10 years ago. And
did that surprise you as a writer when you came in, you started hearing these stories and getting a little bit more understanding of that code, that broken line?
It did, because I was trying to, I thought I was making up something kind of fantastical, that you had these cops who would just be given this power to go anywhere in the city, and they would use that power just to do the most horrible things.
Yeah, you're a fiction writer.
Just like power, that's what power does. Oh, okay, it turns out there was a crew of cops that did pretty much exactly what I was thinking about, maybe even worse. But then, of course, the thing about if you're writing a book is that you get to make them pay for it. And you get to make the dirty cops pay and the bosses above them who knew exactly what they were doing and as far up as it goes. You get to make everybody pay because this is a fictional world and you get to have that justice. But in real life, it doesn't always end up that way.
As a fiction writer, how much does your work straddle a line with real issues and things that have happened in real life?
I mean, the best crime fiction does exactly that. The best crime fiction is based on research that comes right out of real life. The Cartel by Don Winslow was the best crime novel last year. And it was based so closely on exactly what's happening in Mexico that you felt like you were just there living in that world. And that's what crime fiction can do. It can really just take you into these places and make you, I mean, there's the old saying that fiction is truer than nonfiction sometimes.
For you, when you're building a character like Nick, where did they come from? I mean, is it the kind of thing where you're like, I got a guy. How do you, as you've been doing New York Times bestseller, I mean, you're an Edgar Award winner. Where did the characters come from?
Well, I've been working on this Alex McKnight series for a long time, and I'd done 10 books with him, and it felt like I wanted to do something really different. I took one break, and I did a book called The Luck Artist about a young safecracker. So that was a really good break, because then I can go back to the series with a whole new energy and be a better writer when I go back. And this time it felt like it was time for something even farther out, something really different, and not just a one-time book, but just to really start a whole new series that I can work on and still come back to the Alex McKnight series. I mean, if you like that series, I hope you like this series too. Mm-hmm. And by the way, in a future book, both of those characters will be in the same book.
That was a question of mine.
Yes, so they're going to run into each other. So that'll be very fun. But
hopefully in a cabin somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if it's Alex, that's sort of where you have to go to find him. But I was working with a film producer and screenwriter, Shane Salerno, who wrote one of the Avatar sequels and is adapting The Cartel, as a matter of fact, which is why that book was on my mind. And we were just sort of throwing some ideas together, and they sort of collided. And we started with the situation first. He's in this, he's getting out of prison, and he's on call. And everybody he touches, he puts in danger. I mean, there's this instant conflict and drama just from the situation that he's in. And that really comes from, if you've ever been to a maximum security prison, I mean, part of the research, again, being a crime writer, is to go to these places. And I've been to a maximum security prison, and I've gone inside. It's the most amazing experience you've ever had, because your mind knows you're getting out in 2 hours, and your body doesn't know. Your animal body reaction, your visceral reaction as those doors close is that you're trapped in here. Mm-hmm. You start to think, what if they don't let me out? You start to just think crazy, and your chest tightens, and because everything is different. The air is different. The light is different. There's a smell that's unlike anything else. It's not just a bad smell. It's a smell of despair and hopelessness, and it made me think, that day when I felt that, I have to hold on to this feeling, because someday I'm going to use that as the beginning of an idea, which is, if this was me and I was going in this place and I knew I'd never get out or it'd be a long, long time, what would I do to get out of this place? And the answer is pretty much anything.
How much of that is how you write, taking feelings, experiences, emotions that you've had in your lifetime and being able to squirrel them away for when it's appropriate?
That's where some of the best ideas start. And Stephen King says that he compares it to a swamp that you have in your mind as a writer. And all these things go in it, and they all get combined together, and something from one part of your life and this person that you met somewhere else years later, they sort of come together, and it comes out, and something steps out of that swamp, and it's like this whole new thing that's sort of come together.
Yeah.
But those feelings, I mean, for Alex, it was the feeling of being alone in a cabin. And why was he there? Why was he in the most remote place he could find? What drove him there? That was really the first thing that I had with Alex. And with Michael, the lock artist, it was, what does it feel like to be 17 years old and not belong anywhere? Which is a very common feeling that we've all probably gone through.
Right.
But I just sort of followed that. And the most fun thing about that book was that I got to meet a safecracker and learn about opening safes. And I actually learned how to pick locks for that book. And I still practice every day. Because you have to practice lock picking every day, or you lose the touch.
Really?
So I've got lock picks on my writing desk and locks, and whenever I have to take a break and clear my head, I'll open up a lock. And some people do yoga, you know, and I open locks. This is what crime writers get to do. This is the world that they get to live in, and that's how the research starts. Really,
it's
just feeling it yourself.
Yeah. Steve Hamilton is the author of The Second Life of Nick Mason, which is out now. Steve, of course, is the man behind the Alex McKnight series. Let's take a break for the news. When we come back, more with Steve Hamilton. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. My guest tonight at the big table is Steve Hamilton, the author of The Second Life of Nick Mason. Steve is an award-winning author, two Edgar Award winners, New York Times bestseller for his Alex McKnight series. He's got a tremendous, tremendous resume. And Nick Mason's going to be a series. This is just book one. When do you decide that? When does a series pop out of your head?
Well, now that I've been doing this for a while, it was obvious to me from the beginning. This would be a series. Like I said, I'm in the second book now. I really have seven of them all sort of laid out.
And that's usually how it works with mystery novels. Like, you'll get a lot more stories surrounding one character. Why is that?
There's something about the mystery genre that just lends itself to having this one character that you follow from one situation to the other. And then this goes back to Sherlock Holmes. I mean, that was one, mm-hmm. Sort of the first great series character. And it just started this great tradition. Or Philip Marlowe, you know, and the old American hard-boiled hero, which is the stuff I loved so much growing up. Reading myself, because that's writers start out as readers, and that's what I always wanted to do myself.
You know, we've had authors in here before, and you'll hear some of the people talk about the idea of, you know, they were in a career, they're a federal prosecutor, and then they turned to being an author, you know, or things like that. But in your case, you've always wanted to be a writer, and I mean, you've had day jobs, and you continue to have day jobs.
Yeah.
But talk about, you know, what drew you to this? Why mystery?
It feels like I've always been a writer, and it's always what I was going to do when I grew up, you know. But real life does happen, and that's why when I graduated from college, I actually did work at IBM for 30 years. And it was kind of exhausting because I'd work 8 or 9 hours during the day, and I'd go home late at night after everybody went to bed, and that would be my time. And I would write every night, and I wrote 12 books that way. And all
That's
these
amazing.
Things, you know, these good things happen with the awards and the notable books of the year, New York Times. I mean, all this great stuff happened. So that was enough to keep me going. I felt like I was keeping that promise that I'd made to myself. But it just came a time where with this book, this book felt like it was like my last chance to really break out and just be a full-time writer. That's why this one book was so important to me. And I actually left IBM. When I was writing this book,
wow.
with a new deal with my old publisher, and that's when things got a little crazy.
What you're referring to? You've had an interesting ride in the publishing world, and one that a lot of authors don't usually have. I mean, I'll have authors in here, and they're like, "Oh, I got a 2-book deal and this kind of thing." You turned down or got out of a really big contract with a very good payday. To essentially go to another company. Talk about that.
It was the most terrifying time of my life. It was really just a matter of I believed in this book so much that I just couldn't let it die.
And that's what you felt was going to happen.
That's what I knew was going to happen. I mean, we had, you know, I'd left IBM. This is St. Martin's Press, my old publisher, who I was loyal to for 17 years. I wrote 12 books for them. They're the only publisher that I ever knew.
Mm-hmm.
Other authors are telling me, you have to leave these guys, you know, everybody leaves. And I was the one guy who stayed. And I wanted to make this new series with them. I told my agent,
let's do it with them.
Let's not go somewhere else, you know, because I believed that we could do something. So it was, you know, it was such a hard time for me when we were 60 days away from this book being released. I mean, they were literally going to print like the next day. They were going to start running the presses on these books. And we finally saw the marketing plan for this book, and there was nothing. There was no national media interviews, no.
Which is sort of a sign of the times, right? I mean, less and less
it is,
publishers are putting anything
that's
towards
true.
The marketing of the
I mean,
book.
And that sort of got exposed right. a little bit in this story, but they had made these promises that everything would be different this mm-hmm. time. That after, I mean, I sold 1 million books for those guys, and this was the book that was going to change that. This was the book that I was going to get national support and really go on a national tour for the first time
and just deservedly be
a full-time writer. Yeah, right. I mean, that's all I ever wanted to do. And it was so heartbreaking to see that this book, it just wasn't going to happen. And so we made the absolutely gut-wrenching decision. It was not easy at all. We have to leave. I mean, that's the last thing that we thought of doing, but it was the only choice because we believed in this book and we thought it deserved to at least have a shot.
And that's not, to people listening out there, that decision, that's a contract. And that decision, you have to buy yourself out of your own contract. So it's more than gut-wrenching. There's money involved.
That's just one more reason why it was so terrifying. Plus the fact that they were telling us, you just made the biggest mistake of your life. You just ruined your career.
Yeah, you're not going to work anymore, that kind of
you're
stuff.
You're done. And so it was, I mean, that, I'm going back to that week. That was just last summer. And but it sort of touched this nerve because, I mean, we were supposed to do it nice and quietly and respectfully, but they sort of took this shot at me on my way out the door and just released this little statement that they were the ones that were canceling the book with no other explanation, and we had to respond to that. And the next thing I knew, it was literally front page on Publishers Weekly. And the whole thing was so overwhelming and so humbling to me because I got so much response from other authors
right.
who had been in the same situation or could relate to it.
Right.
And it was just this amazing week of my life where all of a sudden this story was the biggest thing in publishing. And the one thing we had going for us was that manuscript was out there because it was in galleys by then. And the next day, Shane got offers from 10 publishers.
Wow.
And that night, it was like 24 hours later, we agreed to a new deal with Putnam.
Yeah, and it was a big deal.
It was a better deal, but I mean,
multi-book deal.
But it
like
really,
bit,
but yeah. it didn't feel like it was about me anymore.
Right.
You know, it wasn't about me or book deal. It was just, it felt like I was making a bet on myself, as hokey as that sounds. You know, I was standing up. You know, I'm a modest Michigan boy. I'm not that kind of a person who's going to wants to go out and make a big fuss about it. But
what I love about that story is that it's relatable to any artist.
Yeah.
Who has to make a decision in their life to go full time. And we'll be a musician or, you know, a comedian or whatever it is. At some point or another, they have to jump off. And in your case, even with the success of the Alex McKnight series and selling millions of books, you still had to do that same ritual of jumping off the cliff.
I did. And that's why it was so terrifying. But at the same time, I was so happy when it all sort of resolved itself.
Well, the book is getting good reviews, and people are interested in it. What do you think? I'm always interested in this because the one thing also, like hearing that story, I mean, people will read. They eat up mystery. And that's the one area of publishing where you're going to get the kind of deals we're talking about here. I mean, we're being vague, but we're talking multi, you know, books, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. For mystery novelists, what is it about the genre that brings people in, that gets such a voracious reader, that continues to make you guys the rock stars of publishing?
Rocks. There's something about crime fiction that just has this sort of elemental appeal to it that always has, you know. And I think it doesn't hurt that there are some really great writers who are working in crime fiction, some of the best writers today. And it doesn't hurt that the form sort of makes you really tell a story. You can't indulge yourself in crime fiction. Or if you do, it just doesn't work.
Right.
It's what I always loved to read when I was a kid. Elmore Leonard, you know, all these, Raymond Chandler. These guys wrote this just these amazing stories that would just draw you in. And there was something so satisfying about working out all these issues of justice and of life and death. It's just, there's just something so simple about it and so satisfying, and yet you can keep doing so many different things in it. And I talked about, you know, how a crime writer can make you feel something that other writers maybe can't, like with Don Winslow with the drug wars. Mm-hmm. If you want to know what it feels like to be in the middle of that crazy world, you read that book. If you wanted to know what it was like to be in the hurricane that hit New Orleans, you read James Lee Burke. I mm-hmm. mean, these guys, just crime writers know that it's really you really have to get it right.
Obviously, with the Nick Mason series kicking off with the second life of Nick Mason, they'll be set in Chicago for the most part because he's from Chicago, but could go anywhere.
It could go anywhere.
Do you see yourself having to re-immerse yourself into the scenery, the environment, Chicago? Do you have to come back if you're going to do another book and so on and so forth?
Absolutely. I'm here right now, but I'm really just here for – I'm really doing my first national book tour truly for the first time.
Congratulations.
So thank you. It's kind of –
Has it everything you
talk
thought
about
it would
exhausting.
Be?
Yeah, no, I'm on a plane to Denver tomorrow.
Like that,
I'm
right,
leaving the hotel
right
at like 3 a.m. to go to Denver.
This is what you fought for.
This is what I wanted. That's right. But, yeah, no, I'm going to be back. Of course I'm going to be back. I mean, this is such a great city. I mean, I really learned that in the year that I've been here. I've just come to love this city so much. I'm looking out the window right now at this beautiful downtown area with walk over the river. Mm-hmm. This is Paris for America. That's what Chicago is.
Do you envision yourself at all in a life of writing without characters, without crime fiction? Meaning, like, could you see yourself working into a different genre than the genre that you've dominated?
No. Why would I? This is the greatest place to be. The people who write this stuff are the greatest people. If you ever get to hang out with all these guys, with Don and with Harlan Coben and Lee Child, these are like the coolest guys, and they're the nicest guys too, because they get to kill people, you know, when they write. So they work it out, and they get it out of their system. But
it's a very cathartic.
It is. It is. And that's part of the appeal too. Yeah. Is just reading it. But you can do anything in crime fiction. You can go anywhere. You can write any kind of book. All the great social commentary about what it's really like to be up against it these days, that's all in crime fiction. So I wouldn't be anywhere else.
Steve Hamilton is the author of The Second Life of Nick Mason. Of course, Steve is 2-time Edgar Award winner, New York Times bestseller for his Alex McKnight series. It's a great book. Check it out. Steve, I can't thank you enough for spending some time here at the Big Table.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.